C1F. Number 7A.
We come to the seventh subject of love, and here you feel when you read the text at once that she changes the subject, so as to show here what I summarized, that sin, sickness, and death have no part in God nor in man. You see again love, which really gives the sense of perfection that does not know sin, sickness, and death. And it shows the divinity, namely that God has no part in sin, sickness, and death. And then the humanism of love, which says, well, if God does not have any part in sin, sickness, and death, then I don't let man have part in sin, sickness, and death. That's the humanism of the divinity of love, that it doesn't allow man to have something evil which is no part in God. This subject, therefore, will teach us quite a lesson in regard to the practice, because usually in the practice we treat a patient for his sickness, which would mean that we have accepted the belief that God, love, has allowed man to become sick. Whereas here, we would rise in the treatment not to treat the patient, but to treat our belief that God could allow man to have part in sin, sickness, and death. Or, as I sometimes say, I give God a treatment. Not really, it's that way, but you know what I mean. Instead of saying I give a patient a treatment, I have to give my misconception of God a treatment. Because if I can see that love has no part in sin, sickness, and death, then I can't see why man could have part in sin, sickness, and death. So here is the subject, which starts again with mind, and shows that the law of immortal mind makes mortal belief, which universal consent has constituted the law, null and void. The reasoning is very simple. It's always more or less the same in these chapters on the Christ. It says, mortal mind is the cause of all disharmonious conditions. It isn't the body, it isn't people, it isn't nations, it is always mortal mind that is the cause of disharmony. If I can replace mortal mind by that mind which is God, and have but that mind which is God, then I have robbed disharmony of its basis. So the divine law of immortal mind becomes, therefore, the law which makes disharmony null and void. You can see again why I seem to hammer it into our thinking, how important it is not only to see that God is mind, but to see that God is my mind, our mind, the only mind there is. And if I have that attitude, then I have no more the standpoint of mortal mind, and therefore I have rooted out the cause of all evil. The salvation of the whole world problem seems to be so easy the moment we are ready to accept only the viewpoint, the point of observation, as Dunui would call it, which is immortal mind, then the phenomena which I see are only ideas, and I see nothing going on in this very universe of ours but the moving of ideas, ideas making mortal mind and its effect null and void. In the working out of this, the world may go through crisis, may go through turmoils, but that doesn't interfere with the working of the spiritual idea. It is only showing that there is some opposition which does not want the divine idea to be the only idea. So let's see that sin, sickness and death have constituted themselves to be a law only on the basis that the whole universe accepted it as a law. You know, we accept that people can become sick. We accept that people can have accidents. And when we have an accident, we are quite surprised that we should have an accident. Why not the other fellow? The moment we accept that accidents can happen, we have accepted that it can happen to us. If I accept that people can become sick, I have accepted the belief that I can become sick. So, just as we see that in the measure as I accept that there is only one mind, that is a salvation to the whole world, in the same way I must admit to myself that if I give my consent that anyone can become sick or have an accident or anything, I accept it in my consciousness and it begins to operate in my consciousness. And I mustn't be surprised that when I have an accident or if I suddenly become sick. And then it's no use to say, well, I didn't think of it. Yes, we were. We have accepted a universal law that people can become sick. So love is that which says, I'm either all or nothing. That's always the tone of love. Therefore, either all mankind can't become sick, or if I accept that mankind, except me, can become sick, I have accepted that sickness is a possibility, and I have accepted it in my consciousness, and I have let it in. The second tone here in spirit, after I have seen that only the law of immortal mind is at work, is that it shows that God, good, can never make a law which can be evil for mankind. We say, oh yes, that we know. After all, we have studied Christian Science for 20 or 30 years. We know now that God is good and God is not the producer and cause of evil. Yeah. Don't we think sometimes, well, it deserved him all right? Or don't we think, well, naturally, because I have disobeyed God's law, I must pay the penalty. Is there a law which says that if I transgress God's law, that I must suffer? God has made no such a law. The divine mind has not made a law that if we transgress the law of divine mind, that we must suffer for it. The law of divine mind cannot make a law of suffering. It must come from the Old Testament and old theology that we have accepted that God has a law, and that transgressing the law means that God will send us disaster, sickness, captivity, and so on. But this is not the law of love. The law of love makes no law that if I transgress God's law, that I must suffer for it. It is mortal mind, the religious belief that has constituted the law, which says that if I transgress the law of matter, I must suffer. It is the religious law which has made a law which said, if I transgress God's law, I will be punished for it. But it's mortal mind that has constituted that law. Here you have a very clear statement in Mrs. Eddy's text. I will read this one sentence. She says, it is the transgression of a belief of mortal mind, not of a law of matter, nor of divine mind, which causes the belief of sickness. So God has not constituted an evil law which says, if you are transgressing my laws, I'm going to send you sickness, and so on. Love is love. We shouldn't fear love. We shouldn't fear that by ignorance or through any way we transgress God's law, that we will be punished. If we fear that, then we fear a God who is not love, but fear. We should not fear that because we have ignorantly transgressed the God's law, because we didn't know better, because we didn't understand it better, that it is only right, that it deserves us well, that we go through hell and high water. No. If love is love, then if we transgress the law ignorantly, do something really very foolish, very wrongly, then we should have that warm, loving sense that an enormous blessing comes out of it, but not a penalty. That something enormously wonderful, a new experience, a new enlightenment, a new progress will come out of it. Then love is spirit. Then love is good, and only the law of God. And just as in Christian Science, people become mostly greater dualists as ordinary people, so also people in Christian Science become more afraid, usually, of God than other people. They become afraid because they know vaguely something about the law of mortal mind, which constitutes disease, and therefore fears constantly that they are not knowing the divine mind, and because not knowing the divine mind, they will be punished for it. They will do something wrong, and doing something wrong will bring punishment, and have a tremendous fear constantly that because of not knowing God, they may be punished. That's not the law of love. Let's free ourselves from that law of punishment and see that, and these are very good paragraphs in that tome, which you can read at home, very enlightening, showing that God cannot create a man and a situation which he cannot handle and then let him have the punishment for not being able to handle it. Let's see that whatever happens, whatever foolish thing we are doing, the moment we turn to the divine law, we can see that love is good, and therefore every situation is under the dictate of good, and is here for a blessing for us, always, always, just under every case. This is what she says here. Then in soul, I have written, only when the cause of disease is obliterated through Christ, in divine science. It's interesting that in this chapter she uses quite often that combination Christ in divine science. And here it is, one. Only when the cause of disease is obliterated through Christ in divine science will disease be thoroughly healed and not liable to reappear. See, it is a definite healing. Love of soul, therefore, shows that soul identifies the case divinely. We know that the cause of disease is mortal mind, but that cause may be hidden. It may be so much hidden that it is no more apparent. And she speaks here of the remote, of the predisposing and exciting cause of disease which must be handled. Now, quite often only the exciting cause is seen, but the remote, the predisposing cause is not seen. And the psychologists try to find out the hidden psychical or mental cause of a disease. But we know that only one diagnosis is right, and that's the diagnosis of the Christ as the divine mind reading. I think this is the great step forward which had come through the presentation of Christian Science practice as John Dawley has shown it, which is embedded in the textbook naturally, that he showed that we should never go out from the problem, that there is no other way of analyzing a problem except by the divine mind, by divine mind reading, that if the Christ is not uncovering the cause, we are not uncovering the real cause of a disease. Therefore, we can see the much purer practice when we see that whatever the situation is, and whatever seems to be the psychological cause, that we don't take any notice of it. I feel that psychology has entered too much into Christian Science practice, that the old method of what the medical people call the organ language has come into Christian Science practice in too large a degree. You know what I mean with the organ language? Yes? So the organ language is that which tries to see a correlation between a sick organ and a psychological erroneous attitude. Just as I said, if one is in a situation where one just can't run away and one says, oh, I just would like to run away, but I can't, that perhaps may show itself as a disease in the moving organs, that you can't move anymore. Or that you say this situation is heartbreaking and your heart doesn't work anymore as healthy as before. So the language we use with the organ has some connection. And the modern psychosomatic medicine is building so much today on that definite relationship between an organ and the language which we attribute to it. You must back up to a situation. And if you can't, well, that's why so many people have these spinal diseases, because they are not strong in their backbones. And so on. This is all psychology and psychotherapy. Whereas John Dolly, or Christian Science, shows that in order to find out the error which makes the patient sick, you should not rely on the body, what the body tells, nor on the psychological so-called causes of it, because the real cause, the predisposing, the remote cause, is something which the divine mind has to reveal to us. Therefore, Mr. Dolly's way of treatment, that is, say, take the whole case and put it right behind you into a corner and forget it for the first moment. And then turn to the infinitude of the divine mind and look into the divine mind, into the infinitude of the divine mind. What does the divine mind behold? The divine mind beholds man only as idea, the whole man, the man of idea, the compound idea man. And in that treatment, looking out from the divine mind, one is not in the least interested to think what is the psychological error and what may be the cause of it. One is only looking in science into the perfect man. Jesus beheld in science the perfect man, where to mortal sense the sinning mortal man appears. So that mind is the mind that knows all things. And through the law of identity, that divine mind certainly reveals that which is unidentical with the perfect concept. And so uncovers that error which needs to be handled, and not just some psychological evil which is apparent to one's eyes. You know, I feel sometimes that one is rather cruel to the patients, especially if one knows the patient for a long time, because when they come for help and I'll say, yeah, I know you, you know, I know all your faults. You see, I'm not surprised that something goes wrong with you. Well, we are no angels, no one of us, you see. But to think that then that psychological error, which we didn't like, is then just the cause of that disease, is a bit stupid. The remote, the hidden, the unknown cause may be, and certainly in the most case, will be something very, 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 very different. And only the divine mind is going to reveal it to us. So psychology is just on the surface, but it doesn't go deep enough. And it isn't a warm practice, if I may say so. This psychological treatment. The warm practice is really, if I really can put the whole mortal concept of the patient right away and just enjoy seeing the grandeur of the identity man. Where I have no axe to grind with my patient. And just see the beauty of holiness of what man is as such. And this is a much nicer practice than to think, now after all he comes to me, now I can tell him where he got wrong. So we can see what Mrs. Eddy here says when she is speaking here, that the cause of suffering must be removed, and that this cause of suffering may be a remote or predisposing cause, and says, and this can only be removed but through Christ in divine science. See, no psychology. Through Christ in divine science. Now we know Christ in divine science because we have gone through the levels. Those levels are alive to us now, and they show us that the Christ in divine science is the one truth. The truth about all. Just truth itself. That truth which includes all the truths in one view and knows only truth as such. Well, that Christ in divine science can't stand alone. It always translates itself through the Christ in absolute Christian science. And therefore, right afterwards, she speaks here that truth, life, and love heal the sick. See, she starts in that tone of love and soul, which should identify the real, remote, hidden cause of disease. She doesn't start with the disease and say what it is. She starts with the Christ in divine science, the one truth. And because Christ in divine science must reflect Christ in absolute Christian science, which is truth, life, and love, she says, and this Christ is the Christ to every individual situation. Therefore, the moment we see that it is the Christ to the specific error, it translates itself as truth to the point of view of life, of individual truths, to the specific truth about the situation, and show that this specific truth is love, is the solvent, the universal solvent for this situation. So, in this way, we let the divine Christ reveal itself to us and reveal itself as uncovering that error which needs to be destroyed. Then as principle, she shows, it's still in that part where we see that because God knows no sin, sickness, and death, men can have no sin, sickness, and death. So as principle, she says, in God's government, discord of any kind is no part of man. If we give ourselves a treatment to the point where we see that discord is no part in principle, in the divine principle, we have given ourselves also a treatment that discord is no part of man. Because we can't correct our concept of God without correcting our concept of his idea. The scientific unity between God and man must be wrought out in life practice. So I can't see God principle as universal harmony and next to it a man in discord. It's just not possible.